from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. One of the most competitive Republican primaries in the state is occurring in Missouri's 6th Congressional District, which stretches from northeast Missouri all the way to the Nebraska border. Republican Nathan Willett believes that he is the most qualified candidate to succeed Congressman Sam Graves, who is not seeking another term. And the Kansas City City Councilman joins us on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about his campaign and why he is not concerned that Graves is backing another candidate. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
Let's go back to some of those policies, to that peace and prosperity that we had some 4 to 5 years ago.
Everywhere is Democrat country once this Democrat's been there.
There are a lot of things in Washington that are very bipartisan, including some bills that I've already gotten passed.
And I think it works best when you can see both sides, but you have to pick one, and I firmly align with the Republicans.
But certainly, I think if she's running against one of the crazy dudes, certainly it's going to be a lot easier.
But I'll take wisdom and age and a few missteps in oratory over somebody who has no substance.
I believe that you represent the party's values and you move forward, and that's what I have done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum, joining us from the beautiful Northland of North Missouri. He is one of the major candidates running for the Republican nomination for Missouri's 6th Congressional District. Our guest today is
Nathan Willett. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Thank you for coming on. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this wacky world of Missouri politics.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm a 7th-generation North Missourian, but born and raised up here in the Northland in the Liberty area. And then if you don't know the Northland, there's actually 200,000 Kansas Cityans who live up here, and you kind of don't know where the Kansas City boundary starts and when does Platte City, when does Smithville, when does Liberty. There's a lot of different public schools who are sectioned off within our district up here. And it's an area where I've loved. There's great schools. There's a great sense of community. And I've been proud to be from here and proud to know a lot of people and represent the area.
You were initially running for the state Senate, the 34th senatorial district, but you decided to switch gears when Congressman Graves announced he was not going to run for reelection. Why did you decide to jump into this congressional primary?
Yeah, well, I was running for state Senate at the time, as you may know, and pretty much cleared the field. We had a kickoff back in last summer, July 31st. We had over 500 people pack the Platte County Fairgrounds, major support and endorsements from our first responders to some ag leaders. And even my opponent, my primary opponent in this race, was there and supported me and endorsed me in it. And so that's what's crazy about politics is, you know, you're friends one day and the next it could be going up against each other. But Congressman Graves stepped down at the last minute, and he did that intentionally to prevent competition in this race. There's a lot of great people across North Missouri who should have had the time to consider running this race. But as someone who's already running a competitive campaign, who've been working two major counties in the 6th Congressional District, Platte County and Buchanan County, built a lot of relationships, I stepped back and prayed about it with my family, friends, and other leaders across our state. And people want a proven conservative fighter representing North Missouri and someone who actually supported the president. I'm the only one in this race who caucused for President Trump back in 2024 and support him wholeheartedly, delivering Platte County 87% of the caucus to our president. And we believe in the America First agenda. I stood for that time and time again whenever our mayor tries to bring partisan issues into City Hall. As you know, 99% of what local government does is not necessarily partisan, but Mayor Q has definitely brought in a lot of different issues. And every time, I'm a good America First conservative vote on that.
When you decided to run, you posted on social media, quote, Graves and his anti-Trump political consultant, and you're referring to the bare-knuckled brawler Jeff Rowe. And I say bear, I mean like the animal, not bears and laid bare, are trying to handpick the next person to come after him after the next 26 years as conservatives
We don't believe in rigging elections. He tried to with his last minute retirement announcement, but I am giving the voters a choice. Why did you send that tweet out?
Yeah, well, Congressman Graves signed up to run knowing that he was not actually going to run. And when you drop out the last minute, and then he also tried to endorse my opponent prior to filing to be even done. So they're trying to just go up and QB sneak it. But I was in position enough to figure it out and realize North Missouri deserves a chance. There's 33 counties up here, and this is the 250th anniversary year of the greatest country to ever exist. And we're going to play some kind of games with our elections and not allow a good competitive field and only allow 120 days for a competitive primary. That's sickening, Jason. That's an absolute slap in the face to the America principles that we believe in, to our democracy. That's playing games. And they have the inside information on that. And so Congressman Graves was allowed to do what he did. But I'm also allowed to stand up and say, that's not right. We need a proven person here, someone who's actually done stuff for our community, actually supported the president at the local level and caucus and voted for him in 2024. And when you go and you pick someone who's a talk radio show host that's just moved back to the district who hasn't done anything, North Missouri wants a doer. They don't want a talker representing them in Washington.
I do have to ask, I know this is an inside baseball question, but you employed Rose Consulting Company when you were running for the state Senate, and yet you are making a big deal of the fact that he worked for Ron DeSantis and called him anti-Trump. So yeah. if you didn't like the fact that he ran a presidential campaign against Donald Trump, why did you employ him as a consultant when there's plenty of other Missouri political consultant companies to use?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I ran for city council, they told me I couldn't even win that race. And I did it myself. And I was doing a lot of this election myself as a candidate. That the people, consultants don't actually be able, it's a candidate that matters in the race. And I wasn't liking everything that they were doing in this. A lot of the so-called machine was not technically behind me, even in my kickoff event last summer. There's a lot of people who were not, who were part of that apparatus who weren't even backing me at that time. A lot of that was done by myself. A lot of the fundraising, everything was done by me as a candidate. And, you know, when you realize the corruption in it, and sometimes, Jason, it takes an example like this to see it really go down. You should decide, are you going to stand with it or are you going to step up against it? And I think it's absolutely wrong that they use inside information of when the congressman was going to step down to try to rig it and try to, like I said, QB sneak it through. And I'm not very happy with it. And, you know, it's also different in terms of local politics to national. And, you know, you hear a lot about what they have here in the state. But time and time again, it's up to the candidate. And they're trying to handpick it and not have another competitive candidate that would want to file. And I thought that was disgusting. And I think that it's anti-democratic, especially on our 250th year. And we'll I was not working with. Yeah.
We'll talk more about the race later in the show, but I want to get to issues because when I watched your campaign video, you said that you would, quote, fight for Missouri farmers, which is particularly important in the 6th district since it is primarily rural and agricultural. Mm-hmm. So would fighting for Missouri farmers include opposing Donald Trump's tariffs, which a lot of farmers say is the reason they're suffering right now?
So first of all, Jason, I'm the only candidate in this race who actually mentioned agriculture in their launch video. And I assembled a great team of ag leaders with broad perspectives throughout North Missouri, throughout our 33 counties who are heavy hitters. And I do support the president's agenda, and I support him, you know, holding other countries accountable on this. And, you know, the president is pushing to open up markets. The way that he does things, it might not be typical, but it is important to continue to support farmers to assemble. As someone who doesn't farm myself, my family has farmed here for 7 generations. It's important to know that I'm not going to know every single answer in this. And I'm going to assemble a good quality team to present different perspectives on the issues. And that's what I've done. And I think that's a mature, responsible thing to do as a candidate. And I have backing of major people from Atchison County, Marion County, Platt County, and Harrison County, all, you know, people could be running for the seat themselves. And that's what separates me on this.
Yeah, and one of those people who is on your advisory panel is Blake Hurst, who used to be the head of the Missouri Farm Bureau. And last year, he I talked with him about the tariffs, and he's pulled no punches about how detrimental it could be to his greenhouse business because the pots he used for some of his plants are only made in China. They are not made in the United States. And there are so many other examples to where these tariffs that were applied to some of these things are hurting farmers. So if you say you say that you support the president's agenda, but you have farmers telling you anecdotes like this, how are you gonna thread the needle of being supportive with the president, but also pushing back against things that are harmful to your constituents?
Yeah, well, it's about thinking long term and putting our country in best position. And there are countries that absolutely rip us off, and it's important to push back against it. But obviously, you do see farmers across North Missouri needing, they want more markets opened. And obviously, I share that perspective. But it's also important to know that we cannot let certain countries continue to not even allow us to sell certain products. I think it was Congressman Smith who was talking about it at a rally here, and or excuse me, Chairman Smith is talking about a rally here in Kansas City, where the vice president came, and is talking about certain European countries won't even allow us to sell some of our poultry, some of our meat in it. And that's what we're going to try to push back on, and that's where we're going to pl play those certain they want to play those games. The president, I trust him, he comes out, he's a winner. But obviously there is a little bit of certain perspectives across these 33 counties, and different farmers have different perspectives, and it's important for me to listen to them. But Jason, at the end of the day, the president is a winner. The president's going to push back. The president is going to do things that are unconventional, and I support him, and I'm the only candidate in this race who has.
Many farmers are also struggling with high fertilizer costs, which they link specifically to President Trump's decision to invade Iran. I'll have an Iran question in a minute, but what would you do as a member of Congress to help farmers with fertilizer costs, given that it was a problem caused by the federal government, so it probably needs a federal solution?
I think when you look at any type of supply chain example like that, you could substitute anything else. Some of our medications that we need, or during COVID, you saw some of our reliance on certain metals that were from other countries needed for production. It's important that America has the ability to produce some of its own items. Expanding fertilizer production, looking at that's something that we need to, and that's a long-term solution. But Jason, we cannot allow Iran to develop a nuclear weapon. Obviously, as a council member and as someone who is a math teacher at a public school, I don't get the briefings that certain members of Congress get in regards to the situation in
You
Iran.
don't you don't get briefings as a member of the Kansas City City Council. I'm shocked to hear that, but continue.
So I don't know the full information there, but I can tell you I do not want Iran to ever become close to developing a nuclear weapon. And I think our president is bold in his actions. Doesn't mean it doesn't have short-term implications on the supply chain. And that's why we need to look at opening or opening up and increasing production of certain things that might be affected through that. And that includes our own fertilizer protection and our production in our country.
So I take it from your answer there. If you had been in Congress, you would have voted no on the War Powers Resolution curtailing Donald Trump from attacking Iran. Is that fair to say?
Like I said, I support the president making sure Iran does not develop a nuclear weapon.
Several lawmakers, including Senator Josh Hawley, have suggested suspending the gas tax as a way to help people deal with high costs of fuel. But some critics of this approach contend it will mean less money for highways, and it may not actually help consumers that much if it goes down 20 cents one day and then gas prices go up 30 cents because of supply shortages. It's just not that helpful. Where do you kind of fall on that continuum? Because I've heard differing opinions even among Republicans.
Yeah, well, obviously, certainty when you get prices up like they are. I think Senator Hawley is an innovative person who makes people think outside the box, and I would support eliminating the gas tax, especially during times like this. But we have seen gas already come down a substantial amount. We're already seeing it at three. I've seen just drove down the road, you have it at 360, so it is coming down right now. I'm glad to see that.
One of the biggest public policy issues right now is around artificial intelligence regulation. A number of lawmakers contend states shouldn't have any ability to regulate or curtail AI. I mentioned Josh Hawley. He is not one of those people. He thinks that states should have the ability to regulate AI. And he has made a speech pretty recently that the federal government should put guardrails around this technology. Again, this is an issue that divides both parties. There are people on the Democratic and Republican side that want no regulations on AI and think it's going to stifle innovation against China. But there are people on both sides who think this is a potentially dangerous technology that needs limits on it. Where do you fall on that continuum? With the kind of caveat that this technology is changing very rapidly and could be very different by the time you're in Congress.
Yeah, well, you just talked about the innovation or that this is evolving. And so when you talk about regulations, I think that's very broad. But I'll tell you this, we do not want to get behind China or any of our adversaries in regards to AI. I do think that we need protections for people's data. You do see, I mean, I've seen it only in my own school district getting hacked, and that data can then be brought in and put into AI systems. So I think it's about protecting people's personal information. We've been seeing it in the city of Kansas City, systems getting hacked. We got to put protections in there. But AI is something that we need to compete as a country. We need to be leading in it. Again, that is, like you said, it has evolved so much. And even by the time that this interview airs, there's going to be already some major developments within AI. At the end of the day, we do have to put protections in. There could be certain state regulations that might make sense. But we do have to be competitive against China.
I do recall asking somebody, because there was an amendment that was almost put on the Big Beautiful Bill that would have basically said no state AI regulation. And I asked, would that affect data centers too? And this person who's an expert in AI said, yes, it would have meant that states could not regulate data centers and it would have all been federal. And you've kind of seen on the other end of the spectrum, some federal legislators calling for a moratorium on data centers, which I know is definitely appealing to both parties. But I also, I guess to play devil's advocate with that point, that seems to be taking away the abilities of states to decide for themselves whether or not those are good. So with that rambling prologue out of the way, do you think that there should be a federal moratorium on data centers, or do you think that that is something that should be left to the states?
Yeah, well, I don't think data centers should be pushed on communities without transparency, without conversations. And I think that's where, honestly, for the own industry itself, they need to realize that they have to build trust. I mean, there's a lot of data centers from what they were in 2015 to where they are now. That technology has totally changed. You now have closed loop circuits for water. You do have better protections for ratepayers, but there's still data out there from 2015 that's being recycled and being used out there. But I don't believe that they should be forced on communities. And I'll tell you another thing, Jason, a lot of times these go into taxing jurisdictions like public schools or certain areas, and they say they're not adding any student population in a school district, so any money you're getting is going to be a good deal for that community. But Jason, do we know if it's actually a good deal or not? What could that land actually be productive wise? Because you're taking it offline for 30 years. A lot of times you see fertile farm ground being turned into data centers, which is a problem that I've been hearing across North Missouri. But at the end of the day, it should not be forced on communities. It needs to be actually have some transparency. I'll give you one example that occurred and I pushed back on in my own council district. I did not vote for the Meta data center that happened here. I did not. That was something that happened prior to me on the city council. But what happens is there's pilot payments in lieu of taxes that is developed. And they occur when you have a permanent certificate of occupancy. But Meta was operating up here in the Northland on a temporary certificate of occupancy, meaning that they weren't having to pay that pilot payment to the school district for that year. And when I found that out, I immediately pushed for a permanent certificate of occupancy, because that's what it said in the legal contract, to make sure that those pilot payments come online, because the school districts are counting on it for teacher salary increases. They're counting on it also for their long-term facility plans. And see, that also hurts trust, right? When you have relationships. And when that happens, it's hard for then another company to come in here and then negotiate with school districts, because they feel like they weren't actually their needs and what the agreement wasn't met on the other end. And so very broad. You could honestly spend 10 hours talking about this one topic.
Absolutely. But I don't have 10 hours, so I'm going to move on to immigration. So there's been a lot of focus on detaining people without legal status. But frankly, there's been less emphasis on disincentivizing companies or punishing companies that knowingly hire people who are not in this country legally. So would you support requiring all private companies to use what's known as E-Verify to check the immigration status of a potential employee? And if they know that they're not here legally, but hire them anyways, there would be insanely high penalties for them doing that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I support President Trump's mandate to deport all criminal illegal aliens. And in fact, our mayor himself wanted to put a moratorium here in Kansas City, saying that we can't interfere with detention, or excuse me, Kansas City can tell the federal government how to enforce its immigration laws. And I was the only no vote on that because I support President Trump, and people in the Northland want to deport criminal illegal aliens out of our country. He has a mandate on that. We need to focus on that. That's the main thing here. That, and you see the border crossings at all-time low. We actually have a secure border underneath this president. And so the fact of the matter is, you're talking about this type of issue. You're not talking about the issues that Joe Biden and the former administration created on behalf of our country. So I'm very proud of the president. Pedal to the metal on his mandate for immigration.
Okay, but what about employers? Because it's not required for E-Verify to be used for private employers. The only one is in Missouri that are required to have it are state contractors. And the reason I'm bringing this up is, if there was a heavy disincentive for employers to hire people who aren't here illegally, I don't think there would be as many people coming here. Like, that's the reason people are coming here, because they're being hired by people that are employing them illegally. So what about E-Verify?
Yeah, I support making sure that we deport all illegal immigrants out of our country. And so I do not like businesses going around that.
I want to talk about the campaign a little bit. The new congressional map, which may or may not be used in the general because there's a referendum, and I really don't want to get into that because there are other venues for that. If you end up using the new map, you're adding all of Clay County in it, and it's still a Republican-leaning county, but it is more Democratic-leaning than the 2022 map. I am old enough to remember the 2008 election cycle, where Russ Carnahan and Ike Skelton won re-election with 65% of the vote, and then 2 years later, Ike Skelton lost by 5, and Russ Carnahan only got 48% of the vote. So in a wave election, these percentages change pretty wildly. Are you confident that if you're the nominee, you're going to be able to win this district by a large margin? Or are you fearful if it's a Democratic wave election, this could be more competitive than usual?
Yeah, well, when I ran for city council, I beat my Democratic chairperson in all precincts, over 30 precincts, including the Democrat leading ones, because people wanted a pushback against a defund the police movement. I mean, people know my record in terms of local government, stepping up good constituent services. I secured the largest investment in the Northland for the Northland Workforce Development Center, $25 million. That tacked on to Senator Tony Lukemire and Lauren Arthur's work that they did together. So we're going to have that $80 million facility open up in 2027. People here know me. I think someone from going from local government, a proven conservative, proven community leader, I think that's what's appropriate. And in the Northland, people respond well to people who have face-to-face conversations, door knock. You're right, there are some more independents here, but Clay County is a red county. We have a red county leadership, a Republican sheriff who does quite well and wins re-election big time. So I feel fully comfortable to win at 60%+ every time if I were to become the Republican nominee for this.
You alluded to this in the first part, but Congressman Graves has endorsed your opponent, Chris DeGaulle. Is that going to make it more difficult for you to win? And if not, why not? Why wouldn't it make it more difficult?
Absolutely not. Maybe it would have been 10 years ago, but he hasn't been showing up across the district. I do respect the congressman. I interned for him previously. But at the end of the day, he tried to step down the last minute and handpick a successor, and people don't like that. That's what swamp politics is. If you serve for 26 years and then think that you are the one who gets to pick the next person, that's wrong. America has changed quite a bit. When Congressman Graves took office, we had $6 trillion in debt. Now we have about $40 trillion in debt. He doesn't get to decide the next congressman. The people across the 33 counties do. And that's what's really fueled our campaign. We have a lot of different people coming together, interesting coalitions. Tonight, we're going to have a major endorsement in this race at my rally at Platte Purchase Middle School. And so, Jason, it's done nothing but help us. You don't see my opponent talk one time that he's endorsed by the congressman. You don't see him post that one single time. And there's a reason. Sam might be respected for some of his conservative votes, but if you look at his record right now, he's been missing 10% of his votes, including on a very key piece of legislation protecting students in schools and in sports, and he just skipped out on that vote. And so I'm proud to not be endorsed by the congressman. I'm proud to actually be a person myself that's not controlled, and I think that's what people in North Missouri want.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much for coming on the show. And for all of our stories, go to stlpr.org and follow all of our coverage of Missouri politics there. And for people that want to learn more about your campaign, where can they find you on the internet or social media?
Yeah, Nathan for Missouri on Facebook, or Nathan Not Nate on Twitter. But vote August 4th for the next generation of conservative leadership, Jason.
Well, I can't vote in the 6th district because I'm currently voting in the 1st because I got moved in the new map. But you know, if that map gets overturned, I'll vote in the 2nd district, but not the 6th. So this is why I'm a good person to talk to, because I have literally no stake in this election. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, creating laundry rooms with improved storage, workspace, and everyday function for one of the home's most used spaces. Inspiration at callmosby.com.